Next on The Spark, we bring you Terry Ward's conversation with Thomas Blatt. Sixty-eight years ago today, Thomas Blatt was part of what's known as the Sobibor Revolt, the most successful revolt of death camp prisoners in World War II. During the Sobibor Revolt, a couple hundred otherwise doomed people escaped the heavily guarded death camp. Around 50 escapees survived the war. Thomas Blatt is one of the few who's still alive. Terry spoke to Thomas Blatt by phone at his California home. As the phone connection was middling, and Mr. Blatt has a heavy accent, we've overdubbed his part of the conversation.
At age 16, Thomas Blatt and his family, Polish Jews, were caught by the Nazis.
I was apprehended by the Nazis and taken to the extermination camp Sobibor. I worked there for about a year and a half until October 14th. And we revolted, killed the Nazis, and escaped.
These extermination camps, death camps, were set up to just kill off almost all of the arrivals right away.
In a death camp, if a transport, say, of a thousand Jews arrived, they were killed in a matter of an hour and a half, immediately. I arrived with my whole family, my brother, my parents.
And they were killed straight away, but not Thomas.
I was picked by the Nazis to work in the camp.
There was work to be done in the death camps.
After a transport from Holland, let's say, 2,000 or 3,000 people were murdered, a lot of clothing was left, and they did need to be sorted. But for this purpose, there was a need of a working force.
Prisoner workers like Thomas were tasked with moving the new arrivals along, shaving heads, managing undressing, then burning the bodies, and dealing with all of the victims' stuff.
Most of us were employed with sorting. Shirts in one place, pants another place, jackets another place. Later they were searched for money or whatever, and later the clothing was packed up and shipped out. I worked in Sobibor in different places, but most of which they call it the fireman, because from the sorting area, when they threw out the books, the letters, the passports, and Stars of David, which everybody had on their coat or on their jackets, they called it trash, and they give it to me, and my job was to burn it. A lot of us weren't able to stand the terrible conditions, and a lot of us committed suicide. So after about two or three or 4 months, the Nazis, they needed to resupply the working force. So if a transport arrived at exactly that time when they need workers, they picked up in a transport 30, 40, 50 workers.
That's a lot of suicides.
For some of us, in that time, death was actual freedom. Death, that was the end of our suffering. I remember being afraid every minute in the camp.
To escape, not by suicide, took lots of problem solving. One problem, the security.
Three fences with barbed wires. We had guards on the towers, and guards, let's see. The whole camp secured by the Germans with mines, and a big ditch with water, and mines. It was a very strong place.
Thomas says there was a bit of an underground group among the prisoners, hoping to find a way out.
The secret organization in Sobibor, it was about six people or so. From the Polish side, the leader was Leon Feldendur.
Stealing a guard's gun, shooting your way out, was not realistic.
People working in Sobibor, Polish Jews, which were young people not knowing about weapons. They did not know about guns, pistols, revolvers, grenades.
So even if you get a firearm, good luck finding a prisoner who knows how to use it. They're afraid, spirits broken with grief from family already killed off, and surrounded by fences, watchtowers, guns. It had to be a huge leap of imagination just to start thinking that there ever could even be a way to escape. What got the Sobibor underground plotters to decide they really could try escaping?
It so happened that at the end of 1943, when the Germans retreated from
At the end of 1943, when the Germans retreated from the Soviet Union, they cleaned out the ghettos and they sent the Jews from the ghettos to Sobibor. And so in a transport from the city of Minsk, a transport arrived. And at that point, the Germans did need some workers. So they decided to pick up 70 people from an incoming transport. And they looked for young, healthy people, picked out 70. And the rest, of course, were gassed.
So here are 70 strong new people.
70 of them, young, and the Germans didn't know they were actually former soldiers of the Soviet Union, and that there were quite a few officers.
So the Nazis need new prisoner workers. They pick the strong-looking guys from the train out of occupied Russia. And so now they've unknowingly put captured Red Army soldiers right into their facility. And Soviet troops know how to use guns.
Yeah. So the leader of the Polish group noticed the possibilities.
Contacted the Russian group, the Russian Jews. And take another 3 weeks after the arrival of the Russian Jews, we revolted.
How, though? There had to be improvising, problem solving.
Leon Fellendler, the head of the revolt, he has seen the possibility. He contacted
The head of the revolt, he had seen the possibilities. He contacted a Russian guy, Sasha Aronovich Kucharski, and together they made a plan to kill the Germans by luring them to different places so that nobody could observe what happened. The plan had actually two phases. One phase was secretly killing the Nazis, and we were supposed to lure them to some place, and when they arrived, there were our people were waiting for them. And when the Germans arrived at that place, he was knifed, and their pistol was taken, or the machine gun. Of course, it was forbidden to use them so as not to alarm the rest of the Germans. Our weapons, axes, knives, scissors, the first phase.
They're prisoners. How did they get axes and knives?
The knives and other sharp objects, it come together with transport. The people coming to Sobibor,
the knives and other sharp objects did come together with transports. The people coming into Sobibor, there were some were carpenters, some were, you know, mechanics, and they had tools with them. I myself found a big knife. I think must be a rabbi's because nice, beautiful letters in Hebrew meaning this, kosher for holidays. Anyway, it was very big, and I took it.
And some took axes.
And what about phase two?
The camps would work like every day, so nobody did notice until the second phase.
The camp should work like every day, so nobody would notice until the second phase. The second phase was open revolt, kill any Nazis and Ukrainian guards, and take our chances and run. The forest wasn't far. The second phase, the open phase, we had the German weapons. Anyway, considering, it was pretty successful. We managed to kill 12 Germans, SS, and some Ukrainian guards.
The planning, the weapons gathering, how did they keep it secret?
Only a few people organized this.
Only a few people organized this revolt or escape, and the rest didn't know anything. And this was, I think, the reason for our success. And I remember distinctly the kitchen. About three or more people were standing in line for coffee, not knowing that at any second we do fight.
We fight to escape. We kill the Nazis.
And Thomas's job in the revolt?
A guy did come
and he told me I should go and look for Germans just to invite to certain locations.
And I had the locations written down
on my hand. I went up to a German and told him that in the sorting area he'd find a beautiful leather coat, which was exactly his size. Would you like to go and try it on? And he went to try it on. And when he went to this place, he was immediately killed. Knifed him. His name was Wolf. His SS. His weapons were taken away from him, but not used because we did not want to betray the action beforehand, and nobody was noticed. And another guy, Beckman actually, which I did ask to go. First he said he would go, but he made a few steps toward this barracks and didn't go. So we were afraid he was aware what happened. He went to the office, and we went after him to the office, and he was apprehended and killed. And later another one they invited a different way. Anyway, I didn't invite him, so I don't know exactly what they do, the way he was lured. But when he was lured to go to the barracks, he was knifed, and the gun was taken away.
And how long could this go on? Didn't the remaining Nazis eventually figure out that there were suspiciously few Nazis left?
The only hitch did come when a truck arrived.
The only hitch that come when a truck arrived with a SS1 Bauer, and he took two Jews to unload. When a body of a German, Beckman, was discovered by Bauer, everything did need to start a little bit earlier. I was aware that any minute something was to happen. I remember Sasha, a leader of the revolt, a Russian Jew, jumped on a table and he said, "Comrades, listen, in a minute you fight the Nazis. We'll stop the killing machine. And if somebody do survive, his duty is to tell the world what happened here."
So now it's phase two, open revolt.
I remember running to the main gate. But was the assessment in shopping cartoons,
and I remember running to the main gate. But then there was an SS man there shooting at us. And I see my friend fall, and I listen to the whistle of the bullets, and did go back to the camp. And I don't know why, but miracle, I find the gate. This was a gate for the Ukrainian guards who walked the perimeter of Sobibor. Prisoners with the axes, we made a hole in the barbed wires, and people start to get through. And exactly at that point, the guard on the tower noticed the people going through the barrier, the barbed wires, standing in the line to go through this hole. And he shot, and I see again people falling. So people were in a rush, in disorientation, I would say, and start to climb the fence like a ladder to go out. And exactly when I was half in the hole to go through, the fence fell down because of the weight of the people climbing on it, so that it pinned me down under the barbed wires. But soon a spark of genius hit me. I wasn't able to go out. When I see, I simply slid out of my coat and let the coat be, because the barbed wire entangled in the fabric. So I slid out, left the coat where it was, and run to the forest.
Thomas pulled a Peter Rabbit and left his coat tangled in the barbed wire and bounded away, coatless.
I did fall down a couple of times,
thinking I was wounded, but I was not. And I was in the forest, and I didn't care if I die in that. Freedom.
He made it across the minefield in one piece, to the woods. What now?
And in the forest, you weren't safe. You can't run in the forest very fast. Pretty soon, we'd be surrounded by Germans just waiting for us. And a lot of us were apprehended.
Over 100 escapees, which were apprehended in the forest. I think I survived because, in a way, my stupidity.
I think I survived because, in a way, my stupidity. I didn't run in the forest. I simply did enter the main road. We were three boys. Run out the road and hide in a ditch. There were always ditches next to the road. So the Germans probably think, be in the forest. Instead, I run toward the Russian front. There were a group of stupid guys walking on this, on the road. Not get apprehended. Nothing.
But there were still German patrols to evade, and Polish farmers. Some Poles hid escapees at risk of their own lives, but others were just out to take whatever money prisoners had stashed away for their escapes. Thomas and his companions paid a farmer for food.
Boyarski is his name. In the end, he agreed to hide us for money, and he had a hiding place in the barn. And the one day he did come and shot at us. Had two helpers, two young boys. He shot me, and I still have bullet in the jaw.
The farmer got paid to hide you, and later he shoots you in the face?
Yeah, in the face. The boy, the helper, shot in the face. And I have the bullet still on the
Yeah, in the face.
Jaw.
And I have it, the bullet, still
and
in the
I
jaw.
Pretended
and I pretended to be dead, and they took our clothing to check for money.
Of the three in his group, only Thomas survived the Polish farmers. To fit this story into radio, even public radio, where we've had almost 20 minutes to talk, we had to cut a lot to make it fit. A much more detailed version of this is on the show's website, where you can read Thomas's books. He remembers the words of Sasha the Russian. If any of us survive, tell the story.
I have written two books. One is Sobibor, The Forgotten Revolt, which is mostly history and pictures a lot. And another one is my biography, which is From the Ashes of Sobibor.
And I do whatever I could. This is what the way I pay back for this survival.
Thomas Blatt, long live you and your story. Thanks for sharing the details of the Sobibor revolt.
Thank you.
Days after the successful revolt, the Sobibor camp was closed, bulldozed, and planted over with pine trees to conceal its location. You'll find a link on the Spark page of WMRA.org to a transcript of a much longer version of Terry's talk with Thomas Blatt, which includes details we didn't have time to dig into on today's show. A sample of those details? Why so few people have heard of death camps? Why concentration camp prisoners were tattooed with numbers, but death camp prisoners were not? What happened to the group of Sobibor prisoners who decided to stay behind in the camp? The interview transcript also includes some related photographs. The 1987 film Escape from Sobibor dramatized the revolt, though with a few technical mistakes, as Thomas Blatt says. Again, on the Spark page at WMRA.org, you'll find a link to a free movie viewer page you can use to watch the movie Escape from Sobibor.